and Gloria G. from Long Beach.
What if I move around? If I'm a mover and a shaker. All right. Just kidding. Sorry. Good evening. My name is Gloria Gorgel, and I'm an alcoholic. And I want to welcome all the newcomers that stood up. I want to thank Luke for a great 10-minute talk. We can go home now. As far as I'm concerned, I'll drive back to Long Beach. It's fine. You know, it's so heartfelt, literally. And you had me crying. I don't even know you or your family. So, but I do that anyway. And I can tell you that before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not cry. So I am grateful for that today, and I don't feel any less than or any less aggressive than I already am because I cry. It is an honor and a privilege to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll tell you a few things, and if there's anything I say, work the steps. If I forget to get into anything and you don't hear anything, I'll just tell you now, work the steps. Work them fast, work them slow, do them wrong, whatever that is. Just do them. I believe if you have the right intent, that they will work for you, whether you're doing them because someone said so or whether you're doing them because the recovery home told, whatever it is. If your intention is there and you want to stay sober, you will. And that I believe, and that is my experience. I'll tell you that my sobriety is February 21st, 1993. My home group is Bellflower Big Book. My sponsor is Carla Rowell. And those are three real important things to me. They don't mean anything to you, and that doesn't matter. They mean everything to me. I'm proud about those things. You know, and I can tell you before, I used to be proud about a lot of other things that I thought I would never speak about from a podium or tell anybody. But I'm accountable to a home group. I have a sponsor that I'm current with. She's not in my home group, which makes it even better for me because I really got to be current with her, you know, and make sure that she knows exactly where I'm at and what's going on in my life. And that sobriety date is something that that I hold really close because it's not my first one. And I can tell you that I don't remember what the other dates were, and it doesn't matter. As a result of a grace of a loving God that I'm still trying to understand, I've been sober since that date. And for that, I'm grateful. I have to tell you that I'm not alcoholic because of what my parents did or didn't do for me. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous blaming everyone for everything and the reason why I had all these troubles and all these things following me when I came into AA, that I blamed everybody. I'll tell you that I'm half Mexican. I don't speak Spanish. My parents divorced when I was a kid. I grew up in Compton, Norwalk, and Stanton. If you haven't been outside of San Diego, those are prestigious neighborhoods where I'm from. Apparently, you guys have left San Diego once or twice. You know, and what's funny is they were good neighborhoods when I was a kid growing up in them. You know, they weren't that bad. You know, there's seedy parts of every town. I can find them. You know, I didn't drink in any of those towns. I went to Huntington and other places in Orange County. There are seedy places that you can find that are just as bad as the neighborhoods that everyone perceives where I grew up in. You know, I went in the bathroom twice, not because I really had to go, but because I just go in there to get quiet for a minute and ask God to please direct me into whatever I'm supposed to say to you guys tonight. And I'll tell you that as best I can, I came in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for 10 years. I went into my first rehab when I was 13 years old. At that time, I was a blackout drinker. You know, and prior to that, I'll tell you this, is that even though my mom and dad divorced, that doesn't make it a bad family. I came into AA blaming that one. Well, I didn't have a family that was together, mom and dad. No, but I had two grandparents that we lived with that were home, that was food on the table. We sat and ate dinner together every night. We talked. There were no arguments. There was no yelling. No one was throwing anything, fists or plates. Arguments were whispers out in the backyard. You know, I'm not a whisperer. You know, I didn't get that gene in my family. So, you know, and the half part of the Mexican is here. So, you know, I just, you know, You know, my grandfather worked hard. My grandmother stayed home and made sure that I got to school. My mom worked hard so that she could provide for me, and we lived with them up until my grandmother passed. And during that time when we lived with them, my dad would come pick me up on the weekends that he had me, he would come pick me up, and we would split, and we would go, and he would take me to where he hung out. My dad likes to drink. I don't know if he's alcoholic. It's really none of my business. The book tells me I'm not to pronounce anyone alcoholic, but he likes to drink. He likes to go to a place called the Witch's Brew, and when I was about 6 or 7, we'd go to the Witch's Brew, and he'd set me up at a little table off to the side, and hook me up with a little Shirley Temple and some quarters, and I was dropping quarters in the jukebox playing Afternoon Delight. That'll tell you how old I am. And 46. And in case you're all going, what's Afternoon Delight? You know, it's a song. And playing the, you know, pinball machine. And I'll tell you that my dad would throw money on a pool table, and sometimes after that game he'd put it in his pocket, and sometimes he'd throw more money down on that table to play another game. He hung out with guys with long hairs and beards, riding bikes, not bicycles. And those guys were warm and kind to me, and everyone, I wasn't afraid there at all. You know, I felt safe at home with my grandparents and my mom, but I also felt safe with my dad in places like that. You know, and I'm a people watcher. I still am an AA. We're an intriguing group, you know. It's a freak show is what it is. And I'll tell you, I used to sit and watch people, you know. My dad would shoot pool with these guys, and sometimes people would break sticks that they were mad they lost. And, you know, I was like, you know, watching that. And the bartender was usually some girl and some wife beater in tight jeans, you know, pouring drinks and listening to people leaning over the bar crying, whatever their tale of woe was. And I was always interested in what they were talking about. You know, I thought, this is it. Yeah. This is where it's happening. When they would step outside to have a few words with one another, you know, and it usually broke out into a fight, that was when it was time for my dad and I to leave because the cops were usually going to come, and it wasn't best to have a 6-year-old sitting in the bar with them. So even though I was over at the jukebox, you know, it just wasn't going to happen. And my dad would take me, you know, where any respectable divorced man goes, to his parents' house, to leave me there at night so he could go do what he needed to go do, which is go out and date and whatever he was doing. I knew all my dad's ex-girlfriends. I never knew anyone that my mom dated. And by the time I was 11, my grandmother had gotten cancer, and she was slowly dying. And at the time, I didn't know it. You know, I just knew she was real sick. And it scared me, you know. I remember that they sent me to my dad's, and I came back, and the living room was full of flowers and plants, and I knew what had happened. And I would get angry, and I would remain angry into sobriety. And, you know, I mean, it doesn't leave that quick, even with a few years like I have now. You know, it's something I remember, and it's something I try to know that they did the best they could, you know, with what they thought was best for me at that time. And what would happen for me at that time is that I would go left, make a sharp left. And I was starting to hang out with the kids that were older than me, that had older brothers and sisters, and I started drinking with them. And we stole from liquor cabinets, you know. It wasn't like I was, you know, going to the bar, or going back to the Witch's Brew. I know I'm not here with my dad, but do you mind? You know, that wasn't happening. But I certainly was getting in your liquor cabinets, you know, when your parents were at work and we were drinking. And I remember that, you know, even going to my dad's, my grandpa and him sat on the porch, and I'd pull off their beers and, you know, and I liked just that tingly that would happen for me at that age, just that little tingle that would happen. And at 11, chugging whatever you had in your liquor cabinet was nasty. It was usually, you know, it was never anything decent. It was like old granddad's, like, who drinks that? You know, we do. And one other hand back there, fantastic. Yes, indeed. Nice blackout playing dimes on old granddad as I got older. That didn't sound right. But anyway, we taped this. Wow. Amazing. My drinking started to pick up then, and all of a sudden mom showed up with this man that she had been dating. I didn't know who he was, but she apparently was serious, and so she decided it was time to introduce him to me. And he was this little guy. And I say little because for me, I don't know about you, but I always sized everybody up. I still kind of get an idea of people like, you know, like, all right, can I take him? And how can I if something's going to go down, you know, whether I'm walking in the parking lot or, like, you know, I'm ready. And that's sober, which is frightening. But I'm parked out front. Just don't come up behind me. And, you know, I remember looking at him, and the deal was this, is he had a pair of Wranglers on, some boots, a cowboy hat. He was from Depew, Oklahoma. And I thought, I don't know what this is, but this is not happening. And she assured me that, like, this was her boyfriend and we were going to move. Oh, yeah. You know, and he was a little guy because, you know, like, he rode a horse. You know, he's a jockey, you know. You know, and so he'd go sit in this sweat box all day and then race that night. And, you know, and here my grandmother had passed away. I started drinking. I'm angry at my mom. I'm hating her is the bottom line. Is it all went on her? It was her fault. It's her fault grandma died. You know, my grandfather is obviously trying to pull himself together. His wife of many years has passed. And you know, and then I start to go wild. We moved over to Stanton. It was closer to where all the horses were, I guess. And, you know, they started taking me to these places. They started taking me to rodeos, barrel racing, and roping calf, which I still don't understand why people do. They want to time each other. Good for you. Go at it. And they would take me to these and throw me with these jockeys kids who were all proper and just didn't have the language or the street smart that I did, is what I can only call it. And, you know, I was stealing cigarettes, and we would go, and there would be a motorhome that was set up, and they would all be out there, whatever, riding bulls or doing whatever they were doing in the dirt. And I would go into the motorhome, and I would start pulling off of what was ever in there, catching a little buzz, and then feeling like it's all right to be at the rodeo now. Yeah, get them, you know. Yeehaw! And frightening. And this is just my experience, okay? And I remember my mom would come back, and I would end up, like, laying. I'm always good at, like, oh, here they come. And I'd lay down and say, oh, I'm not really feeling all that good. She'd go, oh, are you all right? I go, oh, I don't feel so good. She'd go, okay, well, I'm fine. I'm just going to lay here, you know. And then I'm back in there pulling off of whatever I could. And those kids I was trying to hang out with, you know, and they were just like, I would come out and find, like, cigarettes, and I would light one up and just stand there. And they'd stare at me, and I'd be like, what? You know, mind your own business. Like, don't say anything. And they, oh, no, I'm not saying anything. Hmm. You know? And then they would say, well, we're going to want to go ride horses. And I'd be like, all right. You know, and I'd go ride horses with them. And we'd get off. And I remember they'd take the saddles off. And I would, like, light up another cigarette. And they would look at me. And they'd say, well, we're going to take the saddle off. And we're going to brush the horse. And I'd be like, not my horse. Like, no. No, I'm not. And that, I'll tell you, you know, I mean, it's funny now. That would be the attitude I would carry well into sobriety. That attitude of, like, not my meeting, who cares? Not my responsibility, who cares? You know, and by the time I'm 13, I'd run away from home, which is literally across Beach Boulevard into a place called Crow Village. I had some friends over there and was, you know, God shots were happening for me. I just didn't know it back then. And a friend's mom let me stay there. I don't know what she thought. She only was appreciative that I brought her daughter home every night. You know, and so that's why she didn't ask any questions. There was a one-way hotline. I remember I called it about every week or so to let my mom know I was alive. Even though I hated her, I wanted her to know I was alive. I don't know if it was just to torture her. I'm still alive, you know. You can't find me. And, you know, my dad is Hispanic. My mom is white. She's a little, tiny little petite thing. And she would, you know, come driving through the neighborhood looking for me. And they'd say, hey, your mom. And I would be like, you know, and I'm ducking and diving and running from her. You know, she tried to chase me and just bring me back home and take care of me. You know, she didn't know what was going on with her daughter at that age. You know, I'm 13 years old, running the streets, hanging out with people that are way older than me. You know, and these guys were graduated from high school. And for me, I always seemed to hang around with men that watched out for me, made sure that bad things that can happen to girls like me that drink like I do didn't happen. And those guys watched out, you know, all the time. Because I drink until I pass out, blackout, throw up, all of them, you name it, until I think I'm leaving with somebody and they're like, no, you're not, you know, until I think I got this idea that I'm going to go to the store with this guy and they're like, you're not going anywhere with him, you know. They'd lock me up in a room, you know, and give me some beer. I was a garage drinking, porter playing, beer bonging drinker. I'm 13. That's all I got. I'm stealing from Stop and Go, grabbing Boone's Farm bottles, running across Beach Boulevard, and diving into a bush with them, you know, hoping one doesn't break. And, you know, or getting some that creepy guy in front of the Stop and Go to buy you beer who wants to drink with you. I've met a few of you in AA, and
I used to buy beer for young girls like you. I
bet you did. And, you know, my girlfriends, I'll tell you this, my girlfriends one time did that, and he was a real creepy guy. I wasn't with them this time, and they took off in his car and left him. And then they took his car to the chop shop down in Stanton. He didn't get his car back, you know, and I thought, whew, glad I didn't get that amends. Wow, that would have been a rough one. I was at school doing the right thing that day. You know, my drinking, that's what it was like at 13. I mean, that's all I got. I ended up, a friend's mom ran into me, and her son had been through the care unit, and she asked me if I was done, which, you know, what does that mean? Are you done? Am I done what? Specifically. No one ever, no one ever was specific. Are you done drinking? Are you done living the way you're living, Gloria? It was always, are you done? Yeah, I guess. Sure. Just to shut you up. Yeah, all right, sure. And they let me come stay with them, and they talked to my mom, and they worked it out that I could stay there. I'd been kicked out of junior high already, and I'd been sent to the continuation school because the other junior highs wouldn't take me. I started getting on a bus sitting next to my first ex-husband, who would bring a fifth of whatever he had from his parents' liquor cabinet, and we drank it. And I just slowed down. I never stopped. It was just slow down. Okay, I got a place to live, all right, and ironically, it was still in the same neighborhood, but I wasn't hanging out with those guys anymore, and I started to go back to school and try. You know, I'd mohawked my hair, I was trying to figure out who I was, you know, I was recreating myself well before I came into AA, and always trying to find where I fit, you know, and they ended up, old granddad is part of the story, is that I got in the liquor cabinet, and they had old granddad, me and a couple other guys played dimes with old granddad, and I came out of that blackout with puke all over the hall and the front door wide open and just a hot mess, and there was no time to clean up. They were rolling in the driveway, and uh-oh, now what? Who do you blame on this one? You know, because it reeks. The house stunk of alcohol. There's no like, oh, I ate something bad at lunch and I'm sick, you know. And my mom was immediately there that next day. You know, I thought they were really quiet, which is scarier. And then the next day, my mom was there. And a suitcase was by the door, and you're going to the care unit. So at the age of 13, I was almost 14, I ended up in a care unit in Bellflower down the street from where my home group meets on Monday nights. It was an adolescent unit. There was an adult unit next door. I didn't get to socialize with the guys over there. I had to socialize over here. There was one guy. He became my boyfriend. It was he and I in the care unit, just running the place. And my experience there is that I learned about the disease of alcoholism in that care unit. They did their job. They took us to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. They took us to group. They kept us off caffeine. They did a lot of other things that I vaguely remember. At the end of that, you know, we had family groups where we sat around, where my mom would tell me my grandmother was an alcoholic, and then I hated her more. No, she's not. You know, how dare you speak of her that way. And, you know, I love my grandmother, but I know that Kessler that was under the sink was what she was drinking, and it all started to make sense for me. You know, there's all kinds of different drunks, you know, functioning and non-functioning. I am one of the non-functioning drunks who gets drunk and who knows what's going to happen. I got out of that care unit after we warmed up a chip and passed it around in a circle and wishing me well to leave. And I left there with a really expensive book, and I didn't go to any meetings. I didn't call anybody. I didn't have a sponsor. I went back to the old playground, the old playmates, and 11 months into this thing of just being dry and not drinking, I picked up a drink. And I would pick up a drink, and I would prove to you that I know what not to do now, and it was just a phase, and I'm going to be okay. And I started to try to drink again. And in that attempt, I have to tell you that it worked. It worked for a short period of time. It worked till I was 18. You know, I went through high school. And again, I'll show you. I drank Friday through Sunday. I worked at the flower shop Monday through Friday. I went to high school. My mom had kicked me out. I like to always say I moved. Mom had kicked me out because she was done with me. I moved in with my boyfriend in Tustin. I took the bus to go to school in Garden Grove. I graduated in January with a 2.0 grade average. And You know, yeah. And my husband, the high school teacher, is always proud that I announced that one. you know, I had a Mervyn's card. I was cooking, doing laundry. I'd arrived. You know, I was doing well. My drinking didn't bother anyone. Friday to Sunday, I could drink. No big deal. I wasn't affecting anybody. I was a girl with big hair, head banging in a pit, you know, doing my thing. And, you know, after a period of time when I graduated early and then I went back to walk to kind of give them the, now I'm walking, ha-ha. And, you know, I have no desire to continue any education. I need to make some money. I got to work. And, you know, I don't know. I can't keep a job. And so my drinking starts to take off. And that boyfriend of mine, that high school boyfriend I'd been with since I was 14, tells me I got to leave. You see, that first ex-husband is his best friend. And so things weren't going so well. And one more time, I choose somebody who's going to take care of me versus someone that I care about. And it would go like that for a long time. I would weasel my way back into my mom's house up until I was 25, in and out. I figured I left when I was 16. She owed me 2 years, so I just kept coming working time off with her. Only people in AA understand that. Other people look at me like, what does that mean? My mom looks at me that way. No, that's not what happened. Well, no, actually, it is what happened. You just didn't know it. I came in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, not being able to hold a job, leaving that flower shop before she fired me, going on, moving in with this man that I grew up with in the neighborhood. He and I had no business being together. He was a salesman. He sold things that he didn't do. He made a lot of money. And I'm a drunk, and I like to drink. And if you get in the way of my drinking, I become violent. I don't fight with you ladies. I fight with you men because I hear you. What'd you say? And I'm coming at you. You know, and he and I, and, you know, my first ex-husband was 6 foot. He could have taken me very easily, you know, and given, I probably deserved to be cocked a few times, you know, just knock me out. But I would come at him and attack him. And back then, he would get on the landline. If you don't know what that is, ask your sponsor. And, your grand sponsor, you know, he had a pager and, you know, he would call and say she's flipped out, and he would grab all his stuff because we had a lot of traffic at our house, and the cops were going to come, and the cops would come, and I would answer the door, and I would say, he's gone. And they would say, are you okay? I'd say, I'm fine. You know, and they would say, well, if he comes back, let us know. And I'd say, okay. You know, and I'm the one that has disrupted the house. I'm the one that has attacked him. I'm the one that has been screaming, breaking the windows, doing whatever it was. And then all I'm doing is paging him saying, get home now. I am not done with you. You know, I have things to say, you know. I'm the girl that keys your car and stares at you. You know, and I remember his look of like, oh, my God, you know, I would have beat you if you'd done it to my car. But he was just like, what is the matter with you? And that relationship, again, because you can't stop talking, he was just always, why are you wearing makeup? Where are you going? Nah, 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 nah. And when you don't shut up, I just lay hands on you to shut you up. Well, I ended up getting pregnant, and then we got married a few months later, you know, small wedding of 200 people. And I miscarried the next month, and then the next month after that, he got busted, and he was turning himself in to go to jail. And one more time, you know, you're of no use to me now. Good day. And, you know, he turned himself in the day after I turned 21, and I split, because that's what I do. I don't stand by my man. I don't do any of that. You're of no use to me. I'm done. And my drinking would kick off. I was working at the Home Depot. I was stealing from them. I was working for an aerospace company and just getting hammered with my boss at lunch. You know, those were the jobs I had where I could drink. And during that time, I started dating a guy who was from Fountain Valley, like all apple pie, wasn't from my neighborhood, didn't know what was about to hit him. It was me. And he drank like I did. The first guy that didn't not drink, you know, that didn't, he was not able to take care of me is the bottom line. We drank like each other. We'd go to bars and do this to drive home. 2 out of 3, come on. You know, and we're like barely standing, and people are like, oh, my God. You know, We drove home from Bennigan's one night. I was in his car. He's in the passenger seat, passed out, and some frat boy in the back flapping his jaw. And I was just like, shut up, and trying to drive. And he said, go turn left, go this way. And I was just like, getting pulled over. And I remember the cop saying, do you realize your external lights are not on? No, officer. And I had a screwdriver because it was broken as a result of my kicking it one evening as I was upset and he wasn't listening. So I got a screwdriver and I'm trying to turn it on and wreckage comes out of the car. And he's like, ma'am, can you step out? And I said, I don't know. And he assisted me out. And then they asked those questions, which I don't get, you know. Can you do the alphabet backwards? I said, absolutely not. Like, why? You know, and I reek. I still understand. Why do you want me to? We didn't learn that in school. Let me sing it to you. A, B, C, you know. No, not backwards. And I was arrested that night, taken to Huntington Beach jail, and I do what I know how to do, is that I call everybody. I call that boyfriend and my mom, and I've always got a backup plan, and I demand that everyone shows up. And my mom stood at the Civic Center steps in Huntington Beach with that boyfriend looking at me waiting, who do I take? Who's going to take me home? Who am I going to leave with? And I always screw mom, and I always go with him. But mom's always the backup plan. You got to have a backup plan. And I end up having to go to Alcoholics Anonymous as a result of that. I had blown a 2.21, and I ended up coming to AA meetings on a court card. I'd come to speaker meetings like this, buzzed. I was usually on my way to wherever I was going that night. I was entertained by you guys. I thought it was fascinating that this is what you chose to do on a Saturday night. I was only here to get my card signed. Some of the speakers were funny, and some of them, I got it. I knew. You know, once you know you're alcoholic and you leave and you try to, you know, you... Whatever, for me, when I came back on the card, some of it hit home, like, I'm out. I'll get my card later, you know. They'll post it on the board, you know, I'm out. And I would leave, and I ended up getting a second DUI before that 9 months. I had got 9 months of school, 10, and before that 9 months was up, I got a second DUI. I drove off the 605 freeway in a complete blackout along El Dorado Park. I was dressed like I am tonight. I was working for an aerospace company. I had gone to El Torito to have two Cadillacs and a couple tacos. That was it. And I remember wrestling the keys from the little secretary again, sizing her up. I got this. And I vaguely remember driving on the freeway. I was going to that boyfriend's house off the 405. I drove alongside the ice plant and the park right there. I came out of the blackout twice. And once was to turn the key again. It's already on. And the second time out of that blackout was Hop coming over the chain link fence and the sheriff on the other side helping me back over. And I came out of the blackout one more time, cuffed, sitting on the cold slab in the main jail. And I remember them giving me the call, letting me make the call, and I called that boyfriend. And one more time I remember saying, I'm at the Huntington Beach jail, you have to come get me. And the deputy turned, she said, you're at the main jail. And I remember exactly what I said to him, you got to come get me right now, I don't belong here. I'd done a lot of things that don't have anything to do with my alcoholism, that I never got caught for. But I was so above everybody, I don't belong here. And I remember him coming to get me and that look of disgust that I had already started getting, but it was just more frequent now. And from everybody, not just the man that I was with. And we got to his house, he threw clothes at me, he said, you reek, sleep on the couch. In the morning, I do what I know how to do, is I command all of you to handle my business. Mom's got to get my car out of impound, that boyfriend's got to get me a lawyer, and I nag and gnaw at you until you just say, fine. And mom got the car out of impound, that boyfriend got me a lawyer, that lawyer got me the police report, and the police report states exactly who I am when I drink, and it states that I reek of alcohol and urine. Yay. I know none of you have ever urinated on yourselves. You have. You have. You probably still do. And I remember reading that report and thinking, what? Like, that's not what happened. I have no idea why I was over the chain link fence and why I did not continue to run through El Dorado Park. Obviously, not quite in my right mind. I don't know why I reeked of, you know, how that happened. When I have to go to the bathroom, I go, obviously. And I remember that I went back to school 10. I had one more counseling session to turn in my court card. And I remember her looking at me and saying, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "I'm here for my appointment." And she said, "Oh, Gloria." She said, "No." She said, "You got to go back to court." And I said, "Well, don't I have to? I have to turn this into you first." And she said, "Yeah, but that second DUI." Dang, you guys all talk. And I was just like, "Well, but we're almost done." And she goes, "Oh, you'll be back for the 18-month program." I said, "Well, doesn't this 9 months work towards good time, work time, nothing?" And it was like, "No." And I remember that I was pissed. And I'll tell you quickly is that my drinking continued on. By now I'm in bars. I'm drinking Stoli drivers. I'm drinking whatever you'll buy me. I'm putting money on a pool table and pretending like I can't play so I can take your money. And if I don't win, I'll steal your wallet. I'll help you look for it. I'll blame the other girl across the room who you've been chatting with. I start going to bars where I know everybody's name. I thought, it's like, cheers, yay. Everyone knows my name. Everyone, and I know everybody. And I know the new fool that walks in to say, "Target, want to shoot a game of pool?" Sure. You know, I'm that girl. I stopped drinking hard liquor because when I drink hard liquor, I get in fights. I get in fights with you men. Not that you choose to fight with me. I choose to fight with you. And again, usually men that are hanging with me are the ones that pull me back and usually say, "What are you doing? How dare you hit a woman? Why would you even think of it?" You know, the way I talk to you and the way I come at you, you would want to. You know, I ended up getting kicked out of the beer bar that I hung out in at the end of my drinking. As a result of a fight that happened, I had a beer mug in my hand, and I remember exactly what he said to me. And what he said was, "Your friends are gone. What do you want to do now?" And he was flirting with me. And I whacked him on the head with that beer mug, and he started bleeding all over the place. And I remember my girlfriend looked at me and said, "You got to go." You see, I had failed to go back to court. I had a suspended driver's license. I didn't have any insurance. I physically had my license, which was a big deal in the group I ran with. The others didn't. And, I had warrants. And she's like, "You got to split, man. The cops are going to come now." And the bartender called me at my house and told me, "You're 86. I was more upset about being 86 than I was about the guy bleeding in the bar. And I remember it's funny when we talk about this stuff, but it was like, I remember my heart broke. Like, what? Where am I going to go? What do you mean? What do you mean I can't go to Lodka's anymore? What are you talking about? You know, and then I do what I know how to do, which is I turn it around. I felt threatened by him. He said, "Your friends are gone. What are you going to do now?" He was threatening me. And my girlfriend said, "Yeah, that's what he was doing." And that's what we told the cops. And my lies would continue that way. I was hanging out with people that I couldn't stand. We came out at night and we crawled back under our rocks in the morning. I don't ever want to ever go back to living that way with hanging out with people that I can't trust, that I can't stand, but we all do the same thing, so this is what we do together. I can't tell you that all of a sudden I thought, "Oh my gosh, I should go back to Alcoholics Anonymous." You see, during that time when I got that second DUI, I came back for 10 months. I got a sponsor in Costa Mesa. She took me through the 12 and 12. She should have spoke German. Had no idea what she was talking about. I had to go turn myself in. That lawyer only got me 30 days out of the 9 months they wanted to give me for the property damage and all the other things that had racked up on that ticket that I got when I got pulled over on that second DUI, or they found me. And she told me to write down everything I'd take to the grave, and I didn't. I was very busy in those 17 days in jail. And I came out of there and I started drinking again. At the end of my drinking, I ran into a friend from high school who hadn't seen me in years. She had no idea how crazy I was, but she needed a babysitter, and her old man was drying out or hiding out up in the valley. And I agreed to watch her little girl. Her little girl knew how to take care of herself. I started watching her, and Diane paid me, and, it was $40 a week, 40 hours a week. That's all she could afford, and I was willing to do it because I couldn't hold a job anymore. And it was enough to go to the bar and start off shooting a game of pool, buying a pitcher of beer, doing what I had to do. And I ended up having to go pick them up one day. They took a train to go visit him. And in that train ride, I bumped into a guy that was shooting a game of pool. I can't remember if it was in Fullerton or Santa Ana. He was it was a Spanish-speaking bar. He was a white kid in there, and I remember walking up saying, "You want to shoot a game of pool?" And he said, "No, thanks." And I thought, well, obviously he didn't look up. He didn't see me. I was very sucked up and looking good. And I was like, "Are you sure?" You know. And he was like, "Yeah, I'm good." And he leaned over to make a shot, and he had a necklace on with a circle and a triangle, and I knew what it was. And I asked him how much time he had. And he said, 45 days. And I said, "I've been an Alcoholics Anonymous." And I'm sure he was impressed with the pitcher of beer that sat over there next to my table. Because I remember he looked at me and he goes, "That's cool." And then I got the page, you know, that the train was here. And I wrote my name and number down. And I didn't walk over to the pool table and, like, hand it to him and go, "You're going to want to call me." I walked outside. And I put it on his car. And again, for me, the God shots. You know, I assumed it was his car. It was the only one that had the bumper sticker. It said, "Keep coming back." I assumed it was his car. And I'll tell you that I'd weaseled my way back into my mom's house then, and he called. And I'll tell you this, is that my mom had not seen me. I came home when she left for work, and before she came home, I split. So I figure, I'm doing you no harm. You don't see me, I'm stealth. I'm in, I'm out. I'm not affecting you. I'm not taking anything from you. I'm not robbing you. I'm not bringing crazy people to this house. I'm not doing anything. And I know this today, that it is far worse to do that to your parents than it is to show up. She had no idea what I looked like, what was happening in my life, what was going on with me. I had written hot checks all over Southern California. The phone was ringing. They were trying to find me. She didn't know where I was. She was appalled. My mother is a person who walks a straight and narrow, frightening. Won't cross the double yellow line, waits for the green light, the whole thing. You know, won't cross the street unless it says walk, you know. You know, and this is just, she didn't raise me this way, you know. And I don't know what happened. That kid called me and asked me on a date. It was the first date I'd ever go on. I was 25 years old. I either grew up with you and we hooked up, we worked together, you were my neighbor, we went to the same bar, I thought we were in a relationship. Those were the kinds of relationships I had. It was never like, "Would you like to go on a date?" He took me on a date, took me down to Laguna to eat, took me back to Norwalk, and said goodnight. And I assume the date didn't go well, and he called a couple nights later. And he asked me out again, and I'd gotten paid, and I knew I was going to drink. And I said, I have plans tonight. I said, but let's go out tomorrow. And he was like, "Okay, what do you want to do?" And I do with you. I do what you do until I'm done with you, and then I discard you, is what I do. And I said, "Let's go to a meeting." He seemed all excited. "Oh, yeah, yeah." I was like, yeah, just handle it, whatever. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye. If I'd have known that on the 20th that I was not going to drink the way I should have, I would have made sure I drank and I would have gotten it on that night, had I known that was going to be the last night. I really would have. I remember coming back. I remember making phone calls to try to get to energize people to go out and drink with me, and nobody was taking it. You know, it's Thursday. It's Thursday, Gloria. Yes, I know tomorrow is Friday. No biters, nothing. And I went to sleep sober because the alcohol really wasn't, it was just like, I'm not, this isn't shutting off like I need it to. And he picked me up and he took me to a place called Thursdays down in Sunset Beach. I remember a few things. I remember it was a candlelight meeting. I thought it was romantic. I remember where we sat. And I remember the topic was relapse. And that's all I remember about that meeting. And I remember that I sat there and I realized I'd been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for 10 years with nothing to show for it and barely hanging on at my mom's house. If she sees me, she'll probably ask me to leave. I started going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, not right away, but I started taking that little girl to noon meetings down in Howell Hall in Huntington Beach, and I sat up against the wall and I started sizing people up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous like I did in the bar. And that little girl would raise her hand, everybody raise her hand, she'd clap and everybody clap, and I'd just look at you all. And I'd watch. And I watched how you acted. I watched how you all hugged too close and this, that. I watched guys, how creepy they were. I watched the girls, how they were, you know, bringing the behavior that we do to AA when we get here. And, you know, I remember I watched how you acted in the room and I watched how you acted outside the room. And when it was different, I stayed away from you because you scared me. I came here because I was dying and I had no idea what else to do anymore. And I thought, I don't know if this is going to work, but I think I'm going to try. And I drug her mom with me to evening meetings. We started taking chips. I told Diane we're getting sober. And I remember at about 60 days, Diane turned to me and said, Gloria, I am not alcoholic. I had a glass of wine with my mom last night. I am so glad that you have found Alcoholics Anonymous. You and at the time her husband, I'm glad you guys have found this, but I am not one of you. And I tell you that I don't think I'd be your speaker tonight if she didn't go with me to those meetings those first 60 days. It was that barrier that kept you from me because I still didn't trust you. But there was a guy that would go to that meeting. He had long hair and a beard, and his name was Bill White. He's no longer with us. And he would raise his hand and he would share, and he seemed to be speaking a different language. He seemed to be irritating everyone in the meeting, and although everyone else in the meeting irritated me, but Bill. So I thought, he's the one. He's the guy. And I'd listened to him. I had no idea he was talking about Alcoholics Anonymous. He was talking about the big book. He was talking about working steps and traditions and respecting AA. And I remember approaching that man and standing there, because I can't ask for help. I'm not going to lie. I didn't say, hey, can you help me? I just stood there. Please turn around. And he was talking to someone, and he turned around, and he goes, hey, I'm Bill. This is Jill. And I said, hey. And because I didn't like women when I came here at all, and I didn't trust them. Bill and Jill took me to Denny's, and you could smoke back then. And I remember Jill sat here and Bill sat here. It was a U-shaped booth. I couldn't get out. I smoked cigarettes, and they kept trying to buy me a meal. And I'll tell you, I can take anything from you. I can get any kind of money from you. I'd be a great salesperson. I'm not interested in that. But I had taken from everyone that I was like, no, thank you. I don't want a lunch. I just want to know how you guys are staying. I couldn't even say, how are you guys staying sober? It seemed lame. You know, I was just like, I don't know what to do. And Bill started asking me questions that were none of his business. But I'll tell you that because I trusted him, I just, for whatever reason, maybe it was his looks. Maybe it was something I trusted from way back when. But I answered him. He said, do you have a sponsor? I said, no. He said, Jill, be your temporary sponsor until you can find one. She looked like she was doing this, like a cheerleader. Jill was younger. She was pretty. She seemed too clean and kept together. And I just thought, not going to happen. And I remember looking at her, and my head said things I won't say from the podium. And I remember looking at Bill, and Bill would just nod. And I would say, yeah, okay. Just keep smoking. And Jill would take me to what would literally catapult me into the fourth dimension like the book talks about. She showed me how to do Alcoholics Anonymous. She didn't tell me what to do. She showed me. She drugged me everywhere she went. I hated her. She drugged me everywhere. I was an angry woman when I got here. She took me everywhere. I would always stand, everybody, hi, Jill. I'd be all, you know. And nobody was saying hi to me, and probably because I had this snarl on my face, like, what? You know, that woman started taking me to the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it changed my life. If there is anything I say tonight after coming in and out and living the way I had been living and swearing that I would never do the things that I did when I was drinking in the end, that woman saved my life. As a result of trust in her, and even though when she'd give me something to do, I always called Bill. She told me to do this, and Bill would go, yeah, open your book. And he would give me some random page and make me read a paragraph and go, la, la, la. And I would be like, and he'd go, you get it? And of course, I never wanted to seem like I did, and I'd go, uh-huh. And then I'd hang up and go, what does that have to do with anything she said? She sat across from me, listened to an inventory, and I'll tell you this, is that she told me when I was going out to make amends, because I had this list of all these ex-boyfriends I was going to see first, because I'm well put together now. Hello, everybody. Things are well. I am thinking straight, and I am going to be sincere and honest. And she said, nah. She said, how about that old boss you worked for? Ew, she's not going to want to see me. Jill had me call people. I wasn't supposed to show up at your work or your house and go, hi, remember me? I was supposed to make a call and make an appointment. And if you didn't want to see me, I was supposed to accept that. Quickly, I'll tell you this, is that lady at that flower shop took my call. She wouldn't meet me. She asked me what I wanted. She said, yeah, I remember you. I told her that I'd stolen money from her. She asked me to write a check to her daughter and send it to her daughter every month. I didn't ask why. It was none of my business. But I did. I did it every month, and it took me a long time to pay her back that $1,000 at $25 a month, but I did it. And in the end, she wrote me back a letter that isn't me, has nothing to do with me, it has to do with this program. saying, thank you for being an example of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an example, good, bad, or indifferent. Whether I'm at work, I'm in my car. I don't have bumper stickers on my car because I'm not perfect in my car. And I did not marry that boy that I met in the bar either, you know. I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 25 years old. I was a little punk. I had a bad attitude. Women taught me how to act like ladies and how to talk from a podium without using the language that I knew how to use, that you could hear me if I talked this way. The women showed me how to put my hand out to other angry women that I love. Hi, how you doing? You know, and they look at me like, what is she smiling for? Hands and teeth. How you doing? You know, because I get it. I get it. You know, I've been married and divorced in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've recreated myself several times in AA. I have not been perfect. I have been the talk of the town as a result of some of my actions. Sober, I have almost drank at 6 years sober. But I've always remained in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, no matter what bad decisions I make about life. I've stayed in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous, doing what you guys tell me to do, whether I think it's dumb or not. Why do I want to go to the prison? Why do I want to go back to that jail I was in and talk to those women and tell them they never have to come, they never have to come back here again if they want to stay sober, if they want to do this? I'm married to a man that I walk side by side with, not behind and not in front of. We have respect for one another, and we have a sober AA home. We met later in life. We tried to have a family and couldn't. And, you know, my husband likes to say we met later in life. We're older. And, you know, set of circumstances, we got a little four-year-old living in our house right now. We're in the process of adopting. And it's only because I'm sober. Because I can tell you, when I was drinking, if I'd had a kid, I don't know. My mom would have raised it. It would have ended up probably in foster care the way I live my life. I was never reliable. I show up when I'm supposed to show up today, and I sponsor women and walk them through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous like I was taught to do. I try, you know, I try to sit quietly and just ask God to walk me through this day, you know, to be of maximum service to God and the people about me and my job everywhere I go. You know, I'm not perfect at it, but I certainly am grateful for the fact that the people before me continued to just push me and tell me to do things, and I did them even when I didn't want to do them. Sometimes to look good, and I did them, but I'm just glad I did them because I've been able to stay sober. You know, thank God there's no AA resume. You know, mine would look a little shabby. You know, she did a lot of work, but she had a bad attitude. You know, I'm just so grateful for the fact that I'm sober as a result, like I said, of a God that I still don't understand, that evolves for me and changes every day, and I want to thank you for my life.